Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's bet.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in to the latest Behind the Bets podcast. I am Doug Kazarian. In the booth is Dopp, off the disabled list, back at work for the first time in, what is it, a week?
Yeah, just about a week.
What's up? Yeah. Why are you on the shelf?
I had the flu, went to Orlando. My little brother works at a school, so I think that I was just inundated with germs. And so I did a Twitter live stream for ESPN over the week for the tournament, and I could barely speak. Like, literally could not talk at all.
I heard. That was not good.
It was not good. Went to the urgent care, got some meds, took a couple of days, so... You know, just trying to fight through right now, Doug. Someone's got to be here for the people.
So it's not the NBA, it's not like your load management like we see in the NBA.
No, I don't believe that that's what it is.
Okay.
No.
So you actually were under the weather.
I was just under the weather, not feeling well, but I'm back now and I'm ready.
You're ready because we have two pods this week.
I know.
Busy. We decided to break it up because we had so much good information. This one is all baseball. We have Buster Olney, who was gracious enough to give us his wisdom and pearls of wisdom and knowledge. And he went 4-1 last year on his .com article when he talked about his Vermont farm that he was going to bet and everything on it. So he's back for more. He has some picks posted on ESPN.com's chalk page. We will go through those and also just talk baseball in general. Had some really interesting comments about teams that he think will be moving players, like some big name players that he mentioned on the pod that he thinks will be on the move, like Madison Bumgarner and some others. So we'll get into that. Also, Mr. Director John Murray from the Westgate, oddsmaker and bookmaker, will join us and share some sharp plays that he has experienced from behind the counter on season win totals. So we're going to dive deep into the season win totals, and I think it gives everyone a little bit of time to do it. Dopp, you enjoyed this, right?
It was great.
Yeah.
Buster's always fun to listen to, man. He's just so plugged into everything.
Mm-hmm.
You can just tell that he's just, I mean, you ask any question, he's good and ready to go. So it was a great podcast. I'm excited for everyone else to be able to listen to it.
I agree. So let's lean on Bob Lee to take us there.
Sounds to me like you guys a couple of bookies.
Time now to welcome back Buster Olney, ESPN senior writer, covers obviously baseball at all facets, part of our Sunday Night Baseball broadcast team, and back on the podcast after debuting last year. Buster, thank you so much.
No problem. Great to talk with you again.
Well, it's always a fun time and segment to have you on and kind of look at the season. You always mention the farm in Vermont and how much you're not going to bet on the farm. But it's really fun to just kind of glean all the wisdom that you have and the insight and all the sort of circles that you run in, if you will, and just kind of share that perspective. Now, whether it all comes to fruition or not, that's a whole different situation. But it just, I know the loyal listeners of the podcast just really love all the information you have.
Well, I appreciate that. And actually, since we did this last year, I actually purchased half of the family farm in Vermont. So now I literally have the family farm to bet. And you know what? We'll see how it goes.
I love it. Okay. So let's get into some stuff. And, you know, who knows which direction this is all going to go, because there's just, you know, as you know, baseball has just so much information out there and so many angles that we can discuss, but we'll try to summarize and play the hits, if you will. And the one team, and let's start with like your piece for .com. I know there was a sort of a round table with you and some others, and then there was also one of your columns that you wrote. You picked out some season win totals, and I thought that was really interesting. And you did that last year for us and shared that. But let's talk about the Baltimore Orioles, because to me that's fascinating. It's my favorite season win total because – look, you can't put so much stock on what happened last year, but they only won 47 games. That's it. I was stunned when I found out that number this offseason. Their season win total, I believe, is in the 59 range. It's come down a little bit. And you said you like the under here.
Absolutely. In fact, I think the note that I wrote the other day was, you wondered if the folks who were setting up the over-under win total for the Orioles actually had seen what had occurred since mid-season of last year, you know, when they traded Manny Machado and they went into this clear rebuild mode. And, you know, they're not going to say it out loud, but ownership and the leadership of that team doesn't care how many games they win this year. They put no resources into the team for this year. They're rebuilding for the future. And oh, by the way, they inhabit a division with two of baseball's three superpowers, the Yankees and the Red Sox, and the Tampa Bay Rays, who are viewed as a very dangerous team. And the idea that somehow they're going to significantly improve on what they did last year, and that would be a huge improvement to go, say, from 47 to 60 wins. I just don't see it. And knowing as well that if the Orioles actually do have some players during the course of the year that have some success in May and June, they're probably going to be traded because the Orioles are all about trying to position this team for the future, and they don't care how many games they win this year. And I can't imagine how they would make up that much ground in 1 year based on what they have in their roster.
I'm right there with you. I think because the number was so low at 59, it's now 58.5 at the Westgate. That is the lowest in the two decades plus in the sports book history that they've ever posted. So just that number is sort of already a stretch for them because it's just lower and it's baseball, and I get it. But this is an atypical situation. So I'm agreeing with you. But you mentioned the Rays. Let's keep in the division because this is one of the overs here. And I feel like the Rays go over every single season. They've always surpassed expectations. 84.5 is what you posted in your column. And for the listeners, there will be some movement here, but just work with us here. But why do you like the Rays this coming weekend? Why are they dangerous, as you mentioned?
Well, and I would defer to folks with the Yankees and folks with the Red Sox. I was working on an E60 in Alex Cora in Puerto Rico, and he started talking about how good the Rays are and how impressed he was by them. Brian Cashman, the general manager of the Yankees, talking about how when you go back and look at the moves they've made, the trades they've made, various players they picked up, he said, you know, it's basically as close to a pristine year of transactions as you are going to see. The fact that other organizations in the offseason, you know, the number one team that was rated by other clubs for brain power were the Rays. And this offseason, they went out, they signed Charlie Morton, they made some other deals, they've signed some of these team-friendly extensions. They look like they're going to be really, really good. I picked them to make the playoffs, so 84 wins in a division that has the Orioles and the Toronto Blue Jays, I don't think they're going to have a problem surpassing that number.
Yeah, as a Dodger fan, I was excited they tried to pilfer some of their front office, but it feels like they just reload.
Oh, they reload, and you know they're so good at developing prospects, and you know they're one of the teams that I mean they're not going to say it out loud either, but they are masters of service time manipulation, keeping players down in the minor leagues till they're absolutely ready to produce at the major league level, and when they get there, they jump in. You know they're ready to pitch in, and they've got a really deep lineup. In fact, you know, if the Rays finished ahead of the Yankees or the Red Sox this year in the American League East, I don't think anybody would be surprised, least of all the people with the Red Sox and the Yankees.
That's a great point. I like that. I like that. Yeah, no, those teams have always sort of been spoken so highly of the Rays and just what they've been able to do so much with so little at times. At times, they've done more with less. That's the right phrase I'm searching for. I think we all get the point. Let's keep it in the American League with the Rangers, and that's one of your under teams.
Yeah, because if you look at how John Daniels has run the Rangers, like a lot of teams in this era, I think the place that he clearly has been trying to avoid is the middle. You know, the 78-win season is not something he's going for. And in the year when they've struggled, they've traded off guys in midseason. They've made deals. And so when you look at the landscape of their division, with the Houston Astros being strong, with this great core of players they have, Oakland, you know, having made the playoffs last year, the Angels now having signed Trout, doing everything they can to win as many games as possible, the Mariners maybe not being as bad as a lot of us thought they were going to be because they have a really good offense. The Rangers aren't going to win that division, and knowing how John thinks and how he's worked in the past, I think if he has an opportunity to get some return on some trade assets, he'll do that because he's focused more on the years, you know, 2020, 2021, as they move forward with this new ballpark.
It is tough in that division because, yes, I expect regression with the Oakland A's. Of course, they're probably not going to win, I think, 97 games last year. But that doesn't mean they're going to win 81 either. And the Mariners are expected to take a step back. No Edwin Diaz. No Cano. And so this, it's really the Astros, probably in terms of any more than any other, If I remember correctly, the Astros had the largest odds to make the postseason. So the yes-no to make the playoffs, whether through the division or wild card. So they're the highest money line, meaning they're the surest bet to make the playoffs because of that gap. And what I guess what I'm coming back to the Rangers is that they're not. It's not like the AL East with two dominant teams and maybe even a third if the Rays get up there. This is like sort of the Astros and everyone else, but you're still saying the Rangers are that far back.
I think so. And again, the fact that John Daniels, as he makes his decisions, he's not going to be trying to do incremental moves to, you know, improve them from 77 to 78 wins. He's going to be more focused on the future in the decisions that he makes. So if they do have productive players in the first half, let's say they had a pitcher who was excellent in May and June, he's going to put him out on the market because he understands when you look at the a division where the Astros are in such a dominant place, where you know the Angels are going to be trying, where you know Oakland has a lot of good players on their team, it's not realistic to expect that they would contend. So I think he'd probably rather contend for the bottom, for the top of the draft.
Okay, let's go to the National League. I'm just searching here. Apologize. Okay, so let's go to the National League, and we with the Pittsburgh Pirates. So they're right, sort of under 500, 76.5, and they play in this division where, like, really the Cubs aren't the favorite anymore. It's the Cardinals, and the Brewers obviously asserted themselves, so someone has to take a step back, right?
Well, that's the funny thing about this division. It's the only division in baseball where all five teams are trying to win. The Pirates last year, when they traded Gerrit Cole and they traded Andrew McCutchen, you know, their feeling at that time was, look, we've got a nice core of young pitching, and we feel like that we're going to continue to get better. And I was in Pirates camp and, you know, spent a few days around that team. They've got really good young pitching. When you look at a Jameson Taillon, when you look at a Josh Bell, it looks like a great candidate to take a step forward with his power production at first base. They're pushing. Probably the one concern that you'd have about the Pirates is the fact that you are playing in such a deep division. The Reds have stepped forward, you know, adding a number of starting pitchers to that rotation, Alex Wood and Tanner Roark and Sonny Gray, adding Yasiel Puig, adding Matt Kemp. In theory, they're supposed to be the worst team in the division. So all five teams are trying to contend. That might contain the Pirates' win total. So that number is a really interesting number to me. After seeing this spring, I think and probably the most surprising number that came out of baseball last year after what the Pirates did, I think 95% of baseball fans probably don't remember. They went 82-79 in 2018. They were over 500. So that's a good team that's worked in this offseason to get better.
That's impressive. So you have the under. So it's actually gone up. So it's now 78.5. So you're saying under?
Boy, after I saw them in spring training, I might go the other way.
Yeah.
Where I could see them repeating. Yeah, I could see them winding up with the same sort of win total that they had last season.
Yeah, no, that's right. Well, that's why they do these things. It's right on the number. A team that caught all the headlines a year ago in this very space, and I got there. Luckily, they had a rainout that never got made up, so it was a really, really photo finish, if you will, with the Miami Marlins. 63 wins a year ago, and this year the over-under is 64.5. So it was a big sort of like headlines a year ago with the fire sale and the trade of Giancarlo Stanton. I thought they'd trade Real Muto last year. I was surprised they didn't send more guys packing in the tank even harder, but they got there, the under, in terms of the opening number. But where would you go on 64.5 here?
Easy under. I mean, an easy under because they're in probably the most competitive division at the top. When you're talking about, you know, the Nationals, who look like they're, in the eyes of a lot of people, they're favored to win the division. Even after losing Bryce Harper, they dramatically improved their run prevention. They added Patrick Corbin to that rotation. They added two veteran catchers, Yan Gomes and Kurt Suzuki. Brian Dozier to play second base. Victor Robles installed in center field. Adam Eaton moves to right field. Their defense is going to be so much better. The other day I was talking with Jake Arrieta about the Phillies offseason. Even before they signed Bryce Harper, they'd made a lot of moves to upgrade for this year. And Andrew McCutchen and David Robertson and JT Realmuto and Gene Segura, their new shortstop. And then you have Bryce Harper on top of that. You know, the Mets with that great front of the rotation type starting, front of the rotation that they have. If they get 100 starts out of Jacob DeGrom and Noah Syndergaard, Zach Wheeler, that's going to be a dangerous team. And the Braves were the division winners last year, and they had Josh Donaldson. So I think the Marlins are absolutely going to get beat up on. In fact, you know, I sent out a poll on Twitter the other day, and, you know, which of these four teams are going to win the division? And I had so many respondents saying, where are the Marlins? And my practical answer was, you can't have more than four in a Twitter poll, but if you were going to eliminate a team, who would you eliminate? Of course it would be the Marlins. They are going to get hammered this year.
You know, it's funny, this division, I haven't checked it within the last week, but arguably the most competitive division in all of baseball when you factor in all five teams. Because to your point, if you throw away the Marlins, last check, the Mets, Phillies, Nats, and Braves all were within like three wins in terms of projected win total in the Vegas over-under. So I think that's just so cool about this division. And it's also different, right? The Phillies with that monster lineup, and obviously they have Nola, but then you have the Nats with those three guys in the top of their rotation, particularly Scherzer. And then the Braves, kind of like a nice, healthy balance. And then the Mets are all pitching with a little bit of hitting. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, and what's the Nationals' over-under win total? Because if I remember, it's the beginning of spring training was 89. I tell you what, if it's still in that range, is it still there?
So Phillies are 89, and I'm literally scrolling in my phone. So I think that's come down. That was 89.5. And just the way it's all listed right now, it's like kind of hard to figure out. So we'll get there in a sec, but the Marlins are currently 63.5. So we're just talking about them, and the Mets are 85.5. So that's a little bit of separation. That's 3.5. Okay, here we go. So the Nats are 89. The Phillies are 89. The Mets are 85.5. So there's a little bit of separation now, and the Braves are 86. So those four between 85.5 and 89.
Boy, and I love the Nats number after seeing him this spring. At the beginning of spring training, I wasn't so sure, but once I went into camp, there is a real sort of chip on the shoulder with that group about, you know, the departure of Bryce Harper. Because I think the casual fan might say, oh, Bryce is gone, the Nationals have taken a step back. We walked through the defensive improvements that they've made. The fact that they added Patrick Corbin. And the other thing too is that Juan Soto looks like he's going to be one of those players who is going to go from being a, you know, talented rookie who made a dent in the first year to being an MVP candidate right away with an incredibly, diverse set of skills at the plate. The fact that he can spray the ball all over the park, the fact that he's so good at making contact and he's got power. And what I heard from a lot of the other players in the Nats camp was this guy has some real leadership qualities. And other players gravitate toward him. I think it was Howie Kendrick, of course, plays with the Nationals, told Eduardo Perez that he reminds him of a young Mike Trout in terms of the impact on other players. And, you know, you put a lineup with around Soto in front of that pitching they have, in front of that improved defense, I think they're going to win more than 89.
I love that you brought that up because this is something I've wrestled with a lot for baseball. Because like in football, when they're like, oh, this team's fired up, it definitely translates onto the field just given the physical nature of the sport. And when you mentioned sort of the chip on their shoulder and focus of that locker room, I think it translates more into like preparation, right? They're more kind of like on point with their batting practice, whatever it takes, the preparation to get ready for games and just take the situation more seriously. How do you think it manifests itself? When you say there's a chip on their shoulder, how does that, in your eyes, translate to wins?
Yeah, and it's a great question because, interestingly, the front offices these days, the idea of paying for leadership, they laugh at that. Like a lot of times agents will go, well, you could bring in a veteran like an Adam Jones into your clubhouse. Front offices scoff at that notion now, and yet we do see examples of it. Last year, not only did J.D. Martinez, when he went to the Red Sox, add a lot of great offense, you know, he was probably baseball's best pure hitter in terms of his slugging and his average, but he also began this hitting lab before games, down in the indoor cages that the Red Sox have. Mookie Betts is one of the first guys to join. Jackie Bradley Jr. and other guys are jumping in, and now it's all about that preparation, and it's all about the conversation in dugouts during the course of games. I think that can translate. And look, I think at times, and Bryce, it looks like with the Phillies, like he's off to a, you know, a nice start there. It's a chance for him to reset. But there are times when he was going through struggles where he was kind of on his own island, like he was having his own battle. And now you feel like that there's a real strong esprit de corps among the Nationals in this first year after Bryce. And it looks like that Juan Soto is one of the guys at the center of that.
That's awesome, because I'm glad you brought up some of the front offices, because there is such an analytical component in baseball. Where are we with that, with the analytics? I mean, I know, obviously, we know the Oakland A's back in the day with Moneyball. That's sort of the start and the you know, the poster child of it. But where are we in terms of teams embracing it and then also kind of mixing in the old school component?
Well, they've embraced it, and they're going one step further, and it's not going to go backwards. In fact, I had one executive say to me during the course of the offseason, we're not far from a point where, like in golf, every hitter has his own swing coach. Hmm. And they look at, they use the technology to examine their swings. We're seeing with a Rapsodo, a device which tracks the way a baseball leaves a pitcher's hand, the way it spins. Players are much more invested in that. If you'd gone to a player 10 years ago and said, hey, you know, look at your spin rate, they would have laughed at you. Now they seek that information. Think about this. It was just 4 years ago that Chili Davis was probably the most sought after, hitting coach in baseball. You know, the Red Sox hired him away from the Oakland Athletics to get a huge raise. I want to say his salary increased by a factor of three. And now just 3-4 years later, like, he's on the edge of maybe struggling to find a similar job in baseball, because he went, in his time with the Red Sox, they didn't produce offensively as much as they wanted to. He went to the Cubs last year. It's been no secret that he and Chris Bryant didn't hit it off as well. Some thought that maybe Chili didn't use analytics and the technology as much as he should have, and now he's with the Mets. And if they don't hit this year, he's probably going to be in a tough place. The coaches, the staffs are being asked to adapt and embrace all of this information to the degree now. When you go team by team by team and look at the coaching staffs, you know, 20 years ago, they were all former players. Now, probably three quarters of them aren't former players. They're guys who were, you know, individual coaches or maybe college coaches who picked up the technology. This is what teams are relying on these days.
What about the old school eye test when guys are just like, I love his, he's just a baseball player and some of that stuff. I mean, I'm trivializing it, but I personally like that. How much of that is still part of the discussion?
This game is going away from that 90 miles per hour and gathering momentum. Hmm. They need to, and they feel the need now to be able to quantify everything that they see and talk about. In fact, I had a general manager say that, now reflexively, he feels like if he says, hey, I think this player looks good, he's got to back that up with a set of numbers. And look, there's always going to be that conversation about, hey, how does that guy look? How does, how do you think he fits into this market? Those are things that are going to be talked about, but now most of the arguments that are being made in the room are based on the numbers.
Wow. What a shift. And no pun intended.
Incredible how quickly it's changed. Yeah. It's incredible how quickly it's changed.
That is funny. And I was joking about the shift discussion as well, but I don't want to get into that. Let's go to my favorite team, the Dodgers, because their over-under is 92.5, and the injury bugs hit them with Clayton Kershaw yet again. They barely won the division last year by a game over the Rockies. And I guess, where are we with the Dodgers after back-to-back World Series appearances?
And I think as a Dodger fan, since you know them well, in the past, I think if we had said, oh boy, Clayton Kershaw's out at the start of the year, that would have been a five-alarm fire for them. Now, where we are with Kershaw and his career, it's not really that big of a deal. That's the fact. I think we go into every year now wondering, okay, is Clayton going to miss a month? Is he going to miss 6 weeks? He's had ailments, and on top of that, and I think Clayton would be the first one to say this, because he spoke with such such praise of this player last fall. The ace of the staff on a given day is now Walker Buehler. Like, mm-hmm. he is the most dominant force in that rotation. He also is catching up from off-season ailments. He's not going to start the season at full bore, but when he does, he's going to be the guy. And that's the thing about the Dodgers under Andrew Friedman. They built up this incredible depth. You know, they've got Rich Hill. They've got Hyunjin Ryu. They got Kenta Maeda. They have so many. Ross Stripling, you know, all-star caliber pitcher right. last year. He was terrific. They have the depth to overcome that in a division where, let's face it, the Diamondbacks have taken a step back. The Giants have taken a step back. The Rockies, because they were focused on the re-signing of Nolan Arenado, they didn't do a lot of upgrades during the offseason. 92 is how many games the Dodgers won last year. If they went over that, to me, that would not be a surprise.
What about the locker room here with Puig out, Pollock in, Grandal out? I know he was sort of the scapegoat in a couple of games against the Brewers with his defensive mishaps. Yep. They've definitely like kind of turned things over, and then they're getting Seager back.
And their focus with their offseason moves, while they didn't go out and get a Bryce Harper, you know, they didn't re-sign Manny Machado, their focus in their offseason moves was to get more stable personalities. You know, Puig was a guy who, you know, on a given day, he could be the most dominant force in the field. He could hit a home run. He could, you know, go from first to third. He could throw a guy out of third with a cannon throw. But on a day-in, day-out basis, they didn't know what to expect out of him. You know, one of the crucial plays of the World Series last year was in Game 2 when J.D. Martinez dumped a single in front of Puig. The Red Sox staff had noticed in Game 1 that the Dodgers outfielders were playing really, really, really deep. And the Dodgers coaches, manager Dave Roberts, they acknowledged that before Game 2. They talked about it. They talked about having the outfielders move in. But one of the things on a daily basis with Puig was, inning to inning, they didn't know whether or not he would check his defensive card. So I think, you know, it had gotten to the point with the Dodgers, they were like, you know what, let's get guys who we know are going to be fully prepared, fully in the moment. A.J. Pollock has that reputation. You know, guys they add in the offseason have those sort of reputations. They want to, I think, build up more consistency than what they've had in some of their key guys.
I was at that game, and it was painful because I was at Fenway. And, you know, look, it was nice. He's a talented hitter in the eighth spot. That was awesome. But you're right, the unpredictability of him. In the division, the Giants, the rival, they're calling this the summer of 74. Bruce Bochy needs 74 wins to reach 2,000. Also, their win total is 73.5. Where are you going with this one?
I'm going under. The more that I talk to people around baseball, they think they're absolutely going to trade Madison Bumgarner before the July 31st deadline. They brought in Farhan Zaidi from the Dodgers to oversee baseball operations. He's one of the analytics guys. He's going to take a clear-eyed view of this. And the clear-eyed view on it is, look, Madison Bumgarner is obviously an important part of the Giants' legacy. They could always trade him in midseason. And if he returns the quality of his fastball, if he regains the quality of his fastball this year, he would be one of the most coveted commodities in the trade market. You could get a couple of guys in return for him in July. And if you want to try to re-sign him, you could do that because the Giants are loaded with money. Like, they have no problem with money. What their focus this year is will be on acquiring and developing prospects. And I think that'll be for a couple more years. I was talking with a Giants source this week, and he said, you know what? In a couple of years, we'll be back, and they'll be ready to go. But this year, I think the focus is going to be on retooling, rebuilding for the future, and that's why I'd take the under.
That is some good stuff there. As a Dodger fan, I could always appreciate a little breathing room with the Giants because I feel like they have a home field advantage like no other. It's really amazing. Question for you, because we are contractually obligated, given that we work at ESPN, to talk about the Yankees and Red Sox. So I saved that for the end. So just for our loyal listeners would not be just so nauseated by this New England bias, if you will. But let's talk about this. As you know, Red Sox are not the favorites in the division, let alone to win it all, even though they had a franchise record wins last year and also won it all. But I understand why. The bullpen issues for the Red Sox and just the sort of regression and a little bit of a hangover for the World Series. And also the Yankees had injuries last year, and I like the addition of Paxton. If you had to pick one team to win this division, who would it be?
I pick the Yankees. For the reasons that you laid out. And look, I was just in Red Sox camp this week and talking with some of their players, and Alex Cora continues to speak very confidently about, hey, we've got our bullpen guys. We'll find our solutions. You know, part of that is Alex's personality. He's going to be glass half full. Part of it is because he was bench coach with the Astros when they won the World Series in 2017. And you remember how they closed games out that fall. They were making it up. It was audibles every day. You know, one day it was a Brad Peacock. The next day it was Charlie Morton. You know, maybe it was a Lance McCullers Jr. closing out games, but they found solutions. And then last fall, going into the postseason, idiots like me were saying Red Sox bullpen, major issue. And then Joe Kelly stepped up and he was great. And then some of the starting pitchers pitched in. Chris Sale throwing the last pitch of the World Series out of the bullpen. They were great. So they think they're going to find solutions. I still think when you look at it, take a clear-eyed look at it, the difference between those two bullpens is staggering. And you do think there are probably going to be days, you know, against the Orioles, against the Blue Jays, against the Rays, against the Yankees, when that Red Sox bullpen could potentially be an issue. I talked to a source the other day about it within the Red Sox organization. I'm like, hey, who are the big solutions for you? And I got back, some of the biggest solutions are outside the organization now. In other words, the Red Sox would be adding guys during the year. But that's not going to be fixed at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, the Yankees pen even got better without Avino. It's lethal. And
crazy.
I'm excited just to watch both those teams because I do think the Red Sox are one, you know, one of the teams to beat, if you will. Buster, always enjoy having you. Excellent stuff. So interesting. And to be honest, like, this got me more excited for baseball than I was before. And I think that speaks to your knowledge and your information, just your overall passion. So thank you for coming on, man.
Well, I appreciate it. Have me back at the end of the year and say, what were you thinking about with the Orioles? What a surprising 70-win season
exactly.
They had.
Hey, by the way, 4-1 last year in your column. So you're playing with house money.
Well, I appreciate that. I didn't realize that. I was wondering about that. So that's good. The family farm in Vermont is safe.
I looked it up. The Nats were the only miss. But you know what? A lot of us missed on the Mats, and that's okay. By the way, so you think the Nats win that division? I think I glazed over that one.
I actually picked the Braves to represent the National League in the World Series. I sent that tweet out in January. Full disclosure, if I could get a mulligan on any pick, that would be my pick.
Okay.
After being around the Nationals in spring, I think that, I think they're going to win the division. My official pick is and will continue to be the Braves.
But a man of honor, you're sticking with your first prediction. So it is not fair that we make you pick in January, but that's neither here nor there. Because that was well before the Bryce Harper news, too, with the Phillies. All right, Buster, thank you again, man. You're great. The farm is safe. And, you know, enjoy the season. I know all of us will enjoy reading and watching you as well.
Well, I appreciate it again. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Take care.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Kicking is for losers.
Lad, how are you?
I'm doing good. You know, there was a good kicking is for losers moment in the Alliance of American Football on Sunday. I don't know if you caught that, Doug.
I did, Mr. Director. You tweeted about it, and I was just so awesome. Overwhelmed with all the basketball going on. I didn't really get to go kind of look it up and check it out on the internet. Tell me more.
Well, all the basketball going on during the afternoon, they only played one game at a time.
That's true.
So it was okay. We were able to keep up on the AAF. I don't remember all the particulars. One of the teams was up by eight. The team that was trailing attempted a 49-yard field goal, and they missed. And the other team immediately scored a touchdown and went up by 14, and the game was over. So just another reminder that kicking is just not the way to go, ever.
How much time was left when they kicked the field goal down? Right?
I think it was 9 minutes. Ooh. I'm pretty sure about that.
What was the fourth and what?
Well, they'd kicked a field goal on fourth and like medium, but they got called for a penalty. They got moved back 5 yards, and then they kicked it again, and they missed the second kick. So it was fourth and relatively long. But I don't know what 3 points does for you there, cutting it to five. I just think it's pointless. But I'm not a football coach, so what do I know?
Well, yeah, I mean, because that's the way it's always been done, John. You got to understand, you don't know anything because that's the way it's always been done.
I know that I don't know anything, but I still think that I would have gone for that fourth down.
Well, spring is sprung, my friend. It's not just spring football to discuss. It's also baseball season. And I'll tell you what, man, I just talked to Buster Olney for a long time, and I was already fired up, but I'm even more fired up for baseball season. He has me really just so much information and a wealth of information that kind of just makes me feel like I want the games to start right now. How does it feel over there, just given the literal and figurative hangover from the opening weekend of March Madness?
Obviously you heard about my Saturday night. When are you posting this podcast? Because we have our fantasy baseball draft tonight, and I'd love to listen to what Buster Olney has to say before I go into this draft. We got a big draft tonight. Jake Cornegay is in the league. Ed Sammons is in the league. Randy Blum is in the league. And several other Superbook team members are in this league. So, and I am not prepared. I'm going to be honest with you.
Maybe we'll send you an advanced copy so you can beat it.
Because I need all the help.
We know those guys are going to listen to it on the way driving to the draft.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. Take pity on me here and give me some help. I got this draft. It's looming over my head as I do my work today here at the Superbook.
Well, I got some advice for you. Don't draft any Orioles pitchers or Orioles hitters.
That's good advice, but this made me a little nervous. My partner texted me this morning. I asked him, how much work have you done on this? I don't feel too good about this year. This kid doesn't even know who Juan Soto is until about 24 hours ago. So that's not good. It's not a good sign, but go on.
Yeah, that would be bad because I would feel he's going to be one of the top picks, first few rounds, right? I mean, I haven't done a fantasy draft in a while, but I would imagine he's up there.
Yeah, I would think so. And he's certainly somebody the Nationals are going to be relying on to fill that void left by Bryce Harper going to the Phillies. He was tremendous last season, and the Nationals expecting him to have a very big year in 2019, and I think he's going to deliver.
So let's talk about action you've had behind the counter, because I know we've had you on briefly to talk about baseball, and I think I pretty much rushed you. But there were some definitely positions the book's taking. We can start with the Angels and all the hype with Mike Trout and all that fun stuff, and I didn't get a chance to ask Buster about that, but in the sort of communication before we started taping, he did sort of be shocked when I told him it was even money on Trout MVP. But then again, I said it was 3-1, then 2-1. You guys took some big bets from a respected baseball bettor to move it to even money.
Well, two different guys that we respect. One guy betted at 3-1, and another guy betted at 2-1. And I think last time you and I talked about this, I said I probably wouldn't have respected that 2-1 bet if it was from somebody else. But this guy's got a good track record, so I couldn't just ignore it. Got us down to even money on Trout. But, we're booking the Angels team win total to need the under. We don't think that they have the pitching to compete in the American League West, and we've taken a lot of over bets very intentionally, and we've got a pretty big decision on the under. Right now we've got their win total at 82.
And I'll say this about the Angels and Trout. So since 2010, the betting favorite in each league, right? So 10 to through 2018 seasons, then both league double it, what is that? 18 seasons. Mm-hmm. The favorite going into the MVP favorite going into each season has only won twice, and that was Trout, was both of them. But it just speaks to how hard it is to predict. I mean, Harper's been the favorite, not when he won it. There's been others, and the favorites just don't win.
Well, Trout's like the favorite every year, so the only way that the favorite can win in the American League is if Trout wins. Basically.
Yeah, seven. I think this is the seventh straight year. To your point, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's all pretty much always the favorite. But, when you get all these big bets on a guy like Mike Trout and he goes down to even money, you could argue that it creates value on somebody like Mookie Betts, who we have at 5-1, Aaron Judge, who we have at 8-1, maybe even Alex Bregman, who had such a good year for Houston last season, and he's in the middle of that very, very good Houston lineup. We've got Bregman right now at 18-1. At the Superbook. So there's a couple other guys in the American League, specifically those two guys on the Indians, Ramirez and Lindor, that are a little banged up right now, which makes things, I think, even more interesting. But, it's such a long season in baseball. It's hard for me to believe that betting anybody to win the MVP at even money is a good bet.
That's my thing, and I said it on the show that I was like, I don't want to call you an idiot if you bet at even money, but you basically are. And it's not so much that – it's like hitting on 16 against a 5. You may pull a 5, but it doesn't mean you made the right choice.
Over in the National League, Bryce Harper and Nolan Arenado are the co-favorites at 5-1. So I thought that was interesting. I was in New Jersey about 2 weeks ago, and I actually made a bet on Bryce to lead the major leagues at 22-1. At one of the sports books out there, so
I like that.
Yeah, I thought that seemed a little bit high. He's moving into that Little League Park in Philadelphia, where the Phillies play their home games, and certainly Phillies look like they're going to have a really good lineup with Hoskins and Harper and JT Realmuto and a couple other guys. Bryce is going to need to stay healthy, of course, but I thought there was some value there at 22-1.
How did it feel? Did it feel dirty, or are you like cheating when you like made that bet in Jersey, like stepping out on your like a side piece or something?
My brother was very disappointed in me. My brother is an even bigger Nationals fan than I am. And I told him about – I made a couple other bets while I was in New Jersey, and I told him about all of them. And he said he liked the other ones, but he couldn't get behind that Bryce Harper bet at all.
So actually, I didn't even think about that. The Nats – I was thinking about just the fact that you're a Vegas guy and, you know, kind of stepping out in your marriage, if you will.
Betting? You mean betting in New Jersey?
Yeah. I just didn't know if it felt.
Oh, Doug, I go where the good prices are, pal.
That's true.
I mean, I don't discriminate based on state. And I enjoyed my time out in New Jersey. I was impressed with how easy it was to set up a mobile account out there, and I think that New Jersey is doing a lot of things the right way in terms of getting people onto the mobile accounts, getting people onto kiosks. I mean, they've got some things that they could work on, but I think that they're doing a number of things well.
Well, I think the key is don't build a strip. I mean, don't build right. Something where people only want to go. Like, make people more comfortable in their home.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the future of our business is pushing everybody to mobile applications. That everybody knows that. And I think New Jersey, they make it easier for you to set up a phone account there. You can actually set up a phone account and deposit without even going into the casino or the racetrack.
Okay, bud. So you mentioned that the Angels, you're going to book that to need the under. What else?
Well, we also we don't like the Red Sox either. I mean, obviously the Red Sox are an extremely talented team, but it's sort of the coming off of a year where everything went perfectly, and we expect regression out of Boston this season. We've got them at 93.5 right now, and we would do very well if they went under that number. Obviously, the Red Sox lineup is incredibly good, incredibly deep, but we don't think that they have the starting pitching that really matches up with some of the other top teams in both leagues.
All right, so Red Sox under. What about the White Sox? I think that's one of them.
Well, we like the over on the White Sox, and we've been booking it that way. Right now, we've got the win total at 73.5. We would do very well on the over there. And I think a lot of people wrote them off when they didn't get Manny Machado. But the White Sox have been building a young roster now for the last few seasons, and I think a really key thing to remember there is that American League Central is not very good. I'll put it nicely. There are some really bad teams in the American League Central and should give the Chicago White Sox ample opportunity to pick up some wins in the division.
AL West has some separation as well. So you mentioned the Central with the Indians at the top. Obviously, the West has the Astros, and then, I mean, clearly the A's aren't going to win 97 games or whatever it was. Again, so there's a chunk there at the bottom. You mentioned the Angels under, and you guys are also positioning yourself for the Mariners under.
Yeah, we are, and they got off to a 2-0 record in Japan, but we're not too worried about that yet. But we certainly have 73.5 right now, and we're booking them to need the under as well. Somebody's got to win some ball games in the AL West, though. So I guess hopefully for us, the Astros will go out there and win about 110 games this season.
I like the Astros team total over. I think that's. Team total, season win total.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just going to be a machine with no hangover from the previous year's World Series like last year.
Yeah, I think it's because Boston won the World Series last year and they won the American League Championship Series 4-1. I think people maybe forget just how good Houston was last season. Houston was favored in the American League Championship Series last year, won that first game, and then became a big favorite in the adjusted series price. But Boston just ripped off 4 straight wins, eventually won the World Series. But, you know, Houston's got, I think, just as deep of a lineup as the Red Sox do, with much better starting pitching.
And if I remember correctly, the Astros got hit with the injury bug late last year.
They did. They did, and a couple of their guys really didn't have the season that we were expecting out of them. Namely, George Springer was a little bit disappointing last year. Altuve wasn't quite up to the level he was at the previous season when I think he won the American League MVP. And they still were favored in the ALCS. So you really got to look at Houston as a very, very live contender to win the World Series for the second time in 3 years.
Yeah, no, they are lethal. And I imagine that Verlander getting up there in age, although he got his new deal. Look, it's Garrett Cole's the ace. We know that. But
sure.
I'll still bank on Verlander. And, you know, he can give up four runs in seven innings and six innings and still get the win easily with that lineup.
Yeah, with that lineup behind him, I mean, certainly gives you a good margin for error. You've got all those bats in your lineup, and the Astros, like I mentioned earlier, they've got a few of these key guys. We expect them to be better than they were last season, and last season they almost won the World Series. So definitely watch out for the Astros. They also have the benefit of not having another team in their division that's as good as them, the way that the Red Sox and the Yankees are going to be battling with each other all year in the American League East. Houston should win the American League West pretty comfortably.
Right, and I believe that your yes-no on the Astros is the highest there is for the yes because of basically the most likely team to reach the playoffs.
Yeah, we've got the Astros minus 1,400 to make the playoffs. We judge them to be a little bit more likely than your Dodgers, so we're dealing at minus 1,000 to make it to the postseason. But it's because of what you just said. I mean, the Dodgers, I think, they should also win the NL West pretty comfortably. But I do think that they have a little bit more competition in their division than Houston has in theirs.
Gotcha. Anything else that stands out in terms of win totals? Any sharp plays you've taken?
You know, what we really end up with here is a lot of guys just playing our numbers to other numbers around town. But I can tell you, we've had a lot of groups coming in here and betting over on the Diamondbacks with us. And I think it's because the baseball prospectus guys put out a really high number on the Diamondbacks. That's really the only thing I can think of, because I don't know why else anybody would really like them this season. But they lose Patrick Corbin. They lose Goldschmidt to the Cardinals. There's really not much to like there. But Baseball Prospectus, I think they're projecting them to win 81 games. So we saw some groups coming in and betting a lot of positive Arizona stuff over the win total. Arizona to win the West. Arizona to make the playoffs.
Okay, and you guys are at 75.5. And by the way, I just figured out the app. The teams are listed by city alphabetical.
Yes.
Even though they're in order of alphabetical city, but they're listed with team names. So Diamondbacks is at the top, but it doesn't say Arizona Diamondbacks.
That's true. Do you think we should adjust that next year? I can talk to the fellas.
Well, I mean, if I'm looking for for the Nationals,
right,
and it's alphabetical at the end because of Washington, it should at the bottom say Washington Nationals. It should just be Nationals at the bottom.
That's a good point. Let me run that up the flagpole to some of our traders like Ed Sammons.
Well, I mean, look, it's one man's opinion, but I would think it's taken me a while to figure that out. I felt like I'm taking the Wonderlic test here.
Define a while, just so I know.
Well, Buster during the podcast asked me about a couple teams and throughout the course of the conversation, and we had to pause it because I couldn't find the team that he was asking in normal fluid conversation. I needed a second to scroll all the way down searching all the teams.
So you're saying that we got a late start recording this, and possibly we got a late start on this being posted because of the way that we alphabetize the win totals here at the Superbook?
Yes, precisely, wow. Mr. Director.
That's not good. I'm going to have to talk to our trade team about that because I need this thing posted before this draft. I need all the help I can get tonight.
And I'm more disappointed that you have to run anything up the flagpole, given that you are a director now and a famous on VSiN and ESPN.
Well, it's always a team effort here. You know that, man. But certainly, I'll tell you, I don't have anything to do with how we list things on the app. That's really more, actually, Jeff Sherman kind of drives that bus.
Okay.
To tell you the truth. So, but I can talk to Mr. Sherman and express your feelings. You know, speaking of the Nationals, I think we talked about this last time I was on, but I do like them a little bit this year. We've got their win total at 89. Nationals had a lot of injuries last season. And I think people are writing them off because they lost Bryce Harper. But the aforementioned Juan Soto gets his first full season in the big leagues. Victor Robles was actually an even more highly touted prospect than Soto was when they were both in the minors. He comes up this year. They add Patrick Corbin from the Diamondbacks. The Nationals' problem is going to be that division is very tough. You've got four of the five teams in the NL East this year thinking playoffs.
Yeah, we talked about it with Buster, 3.5 wins, I believe it is. He really is big on the Nationals, given what he saw in spring. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. Any more sharp plays before we let you go, bud?
The Cardinals are a team that some sharper guys have told me they like this year. I like the Cardinals myself. I agree with them. We've got their win total at 88.5. Cardinals, they bring in Paul Goldschmidt. It looks like they've got a pretty deep starting rotation. And I don't like the Cubs this year. And I think the Brewers are going to take a step back this year. So I like the Cardinals to win that National League Central division. In fact, that's one of the bets I made in New Jersey, one that my brother approved of. Okay. Didn't approve of the Bryce Harper bet, but he signed off on the Cardinals bet.
Okay, and I'm actually, I like the Cardinals to win the division, but I like Chris Bryant to win MVP. That's going to be my pick.
Chris Bryant. I like it. Chris Bryant should definitely take a step forward this season after a disappointing 2018, but I don't like the Cubs as much as St. Louis this year in the Central.
Yeah, cards are tough, and you know they have those great fans. Just ask them, right? The best fans in baseball.
I went to a couple games there last summer, and they were good fans, actually.
No, I know. I spent some time in Mid-Missouri. I enjoyed going there. It's just, you know, it's a little thing that eats away at me sometimes, especially – as a Dodger fan. All right, my man. Good stuff as always. We'll talk to you, College Hoops Pod, and appreciate the insight as well, as always, Mr. Director.
Anytime. I appreciate you having me on.
Money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
Can never get enough of these Bob Lee drops. Dob, how do you feel about these Bob Lee drops?
I love it. I love hearing the general drop some knowledge.
Yes. This beacon of journalism, to have him do something that is so beneath his stature.
Sure, sure.
And I always love, you know, this is kind of where we are in society. We're so committed to like a Facebook status update. We don't think deeper than just the simple narrative of someone like Scott Van Pelt. Oh, he's just so funny. Yeah, he's also like extremely articulate, right? I said this when Stuart Scott passed. Everyone thinks booyah, but they forget how just a brilliant writer he is and just so amazing when just hosting events. And so we see like one thing of someone and we just kind of, oh, John Buchegrass, he's just a hockey guy. I'm pretty sure he's pretty locked in on all these other sports. Just it may stand out because not many others know as much hockey.
Right. College hockey specifically.
Yeah,
college
exactly.
Hockey.
So, right, he's a huge hockey guy, but he's also a huge NFL guy. And right? So with Bob Lee, it's like you think OTL and this journalism, anytime there's a serious court case, whether it be PED scandal or some of the stuff we've had recently in the news, that's Michigan State or even Penn State stuff. Yeah, he's also like really funny and really like he used to be a conventional sports center anchor and used to do highlight reads and everything. So Bob Lee, I just want people to realize how cool of a guy he is and how funny he is. Not that we're like best of buds, but you know, I've done OTL a couple times. My cubicle is right outside of his office. So a lot of times I've just been able to catch a few minutes with him and pick his brain and chat, and he's hilarious. So
he's so great. Every time that he sees me, he says, "Hey." That's it.
Well, he's probably walking to OTL, right?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm just saying, like, you know, we recognize each other in the hallways is the moral of that story. You know?
Oh, stop it. He is. When I told him my idea for these drops, he loved it. He's like, I'm on board.
All in.
So he wanted to really. So you could just hear the authenticity and the commitment to the role of all these drops. So special shout out to Bob Lee on that one. And thanks to John Murray and Buster Olney as well, sharing some wisdom here on the podcast. We will have our college basketball pod tomorrow, which will be Wednesday morning. So plenty of insight on that. John Murray will have some picks from behind the counter. Matt Eumanns will be on the pod as well. So plenty of time to download that as well before the games tip off Thursday evening. So thanks to everyone for listening. I hope you guys are as excited about the baseball season. So we have two podcasts this week, and don't forget Daily Wager Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN News, the ESPN app. And also you can download and watch sort of after the games because we do some macro stuff. We do some NFL stuff. So it's always on demand on the ESPN app. Have you been a loyal viewer there, Dop?
Of course I have. When I was sick, there was nothing to do but be on my couch and watch, Doug.
Yeah.
I'm all in on some Daily Wager.
We're a last resort?
Not a last resort, no, but you are perfect for when you're like just in that point where you're tipping off into sleep. You know what I mean? You got a good voice for that, good ASMR voice.
Oh, good. So I should maybe work with the Aura app and Headspace maybe?
Yeah, think about that.
I use Headspace. There's like a British guy. I'm like, I don't know. It's kind of an interesting choice for, well, thank you. Maybe I'll look into that. I've always wanted to do voiceover work, like read some, narrate some books.
I think you could do it, man. I think you could do it.
Get the old agent on that one. Great stuff. As always, Dop, feel better. And baseball season is here.
And I'll see you tomorrow.
Yes, for the new pod.
For the new pod.
Take care, guys.